Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dory Smith.
They are basically helping set the table so that people are going to be eating extremely contaminated seafood.
Journalist Dar Jamail joins us to talk about his August 16th story in truthout.org, uncovering the lies that are sinking the oil. It's a shocking tale of fishermen turned whistleblower over the government's failure to protect them. On August 2nd, Dar Jamail wrote a detailed report about the long-term impact of massive quantities of the chemical dispersants Corexit used by BP. He now criticizes the government for reporting that Gulf seafood is safe without specific testing for Corexit. First, we were able to reach Idris Kamal in Pakistan's northwest frontier province. His group, CRSD, Citizen Rights and Sustainable Development, is doing what it can locally to help thousands of flood victims. Groups like his have been given special permission to help. They've opened relief camps at schools in District Nowshera, where waters have receded, but much of Pakistan remains flooded.
We are working here with the help of philanthropists and some other organization like Noor Education Trust, Women Action Forum, Country Participatory Organization, SPO, and Hatak Qomi Jarga, that's a community-type organization of Hatak peoples. So they are providing us some uncooked food within the we cook in our government high school, Tarha, where our main camp. Then we provide that, distributed that cooked food to so 8 centers, 3 in government primary school Tarha, government primary school number 2 Tarha, government middle girl school, and then Natal, a small village where 300 people are living, flood affected are living, then Kudwi, where more than 300 people are living, and then Khushmakam, where government middle school, we are also providing there. Besides, we already provided some hygiene kits to the women and also provide medical facilities. Till now, about 10,000 people.
In Pakistan, Idris Kamal echoing the sentiments of UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon in calling for more help.
In my life, I never seen this type of catastrophic, devastated floods in our country. So it is huge. So I also appeal to the Americans, to the other people who are living in America, please help our nation. I endorse the statement of UN Secretary General, and I also want to please help our people so that can be solve our problems and minimize. We are living in very catastrophic, dangerous, unsafe, and in food crisis type situation. 2 to 3 months, the situation will be very worsened.
Idris Kamal in northwest Pakistan. CRSDPK.org is the website. They're nonprofit, nonpartisan, and non-sectarian, working in coalition now on an emergency basis to help flood victims. You can write to them at crsdpk@gmail.com. Journalist Dar Jamail has been covering the Gulf oil spill and touring the region, doing investigations into both short and long-term health effects. He writes for Interpress Service and many other news outlets. Dar Jamail, welcome.
Thanks, Dory.
Just tell us what you're seeing as you tour the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, it's really amazing to be down here in the Gulf and seeing everything firsthand and seeing the destruction and the devastation, and then have that contrasted with what we see in the media, what we see coming from the Obama administration, because I'll spare wasting time on that. We all know that they're trying to spin this as over and the oil's gone or mostly recovered and things are getting back to normal down here, and it's the opposite. Just yesterday, for example, we went out from Port Fourchon, which is down nearby Grand Isle in southeast Louisiana, and we went out to several islands out there to inspect what kind of shape they're in, what kind of shape the marsh is in, and we were in Sheen literally all day. We traveled probably about 80 miles by boat round trip through the day. And we were in Sheen nonstop. And we went to a couple of the islands and got out and walked around on them. And it was nothing but destruction. Tar balls everywhere, tar mats, some of them probably 4 feet across all over the shore, crabs crawling on them and such. We went in and found inland pools that were just completely sodden with literally brown liquid oil floating on top of these pools inside the marsh grasses. The bottom, the mud is just black with oil. And we went in and dug around a bit, and when you stir the stuff up, it smells so intense you have to just leave because you get dizzy. It smells just awful. And this is the situation out there. And again, all the coastlines of many of these islands are just completely burned up with oil. The oil hits the marsh, it turns it black and brown, and it kills it. It starts eroding promptly. And that's everywhere you see long rows of white PVC pipe that they use to try to hold in place the sorbent boom. With the boom, over time, slips out of those pipes and washes up on the marsh and is actually up above the marsh, not doing anything other than bringing the oil that's already in the absorbent boom into the marsh further. And that's what we saw everywhere we went. Driving back into port, we passed over another large sheen of oil, but this one that had clearly been hit with dispersants. There was the kind of telling white foam across the top, and we have photos of all of this, and we'll be posting them before too long.
Now, you've seen aircraft dispensing the dispersant in the waters in the Gulf of Mexico?
I haven't seen it personally. I mean, it's a known. There's Coast Guard photos of it. This is what they've been doing from the very beginning out at the source. But even more recently, this is what they've been doing inland. And not so much aircraft, but actually we've been talking to a lot of fishermen in Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, and Louisiana, all saying the same thing. Many of them eyewitnesses to basically out-of-state contractors coming in, going out at night in boats, using a particular type of boat called a Carolina skiff, which is basically just a work boat, and going out with tanks, 375-gallon white tanks filled with dispersant, and going out at night and spraying oiled areas that are found by the fishermen who generally populate the Vessels Opportunity Program, who are supposedly out there finding the oil and cleaning it up. Well, basically what it looks like is happening is BP is basically using the fishermen in the VOO program to find the oil, and then they call in the coordinates, and then they're instructed to leave and typically not allowed to clean it up. This is another part of the program. And then once they get away, either shortly thereafter or that night, these out-of-state contractors come in the Carolina skiffs and basically spray the area. They can spray up to 150 feet from the boat with dispersant. And then the fishermen in the VOO program will come out the next day, go to the same place, and they'll find the oil sunk. And then what's left is this kind of pasty, white, foamy residue on the surface. And we'll be posting photos of this as well. But it's very, very clear what's happened. And then oftentimes when it's in shallower water, when the oil goes down to the bottom, as the day progresses and gets hotter, that oil then bubbles back up to the surface.
Why do you think it is that the government fell for this idea of, you know, saturating the Gulf of Mexico with this dispersant?
Well, I don't think it's really a question of the government falling for it. I think it's a fact of the government being complicit in it. This does not happen without the government helping make it happen, and that's been clear from the very start. BP has taken the lead on this. They've gone from claiming no oil was coming out of the damaged well to 1,000 barrels a day to 5,000, and then ratcheted on up, and now we know it's somewhere closer to 100,000 a day that were coming out. And all through that process, they would make an announcement, and it would simply be parroted by the U.S. government, usually in the form of the sock puppet of Thad Allen. That's just one example. We talk about the dispersants and the Corexit and the toxicity of it. The EPA had done its own studies in the past, and we wrote about this about a month ago, where even according to some of the EPA's own studies on Corexit, when they did a test of it with shrimp, 50% of the shrimp exposed to a very dilute amount of it died immediately, and then most of the rest of the shrimp died shortly thereafter. So the EPA understands this, and then since that time we've had several EPA whistleblowers, the best known of which being Hugh Kaufman, talking about how horribly toxic this stuff is. It's an industrial solvent that's just terrible. I mean, the list of how it will impact you is about a page long. So that information's there, yet we have the EPA as an organization and the rest of the entire government involved in this situation, including NOAA, OSHA, NIOSH, we can go down a long list, are basically just helping BP carry out their plans. The Coast Guard has repeatedly denied involvement in spraying dispersants. Even at one point, I quote a Coast Guard fellow saying that no dispersants whatsoever have been sprayed in Florida, despite I have several eyewitnesses who've seen the C-130s come in off the coast of Destin, Florida, Okaloosa, Florida, and spray it all through the month of July, well past the deadline of July 16 when they claimed no more was being sprayed. So we have government complicity in this thing all the way through. And I think, you know, one of the crown jewels of that complicity would be Obama coming down to the coast and taking his daughter out into the water for a photo op to try to show people that everything's just fine. You know, and if you go down the coast a few dozen miles or however far it is from Panama City to Destin, you're going to find giant fish kills on the bottom. You're going to find fish kills so intense as of a week ago that they're closing public boat ramps. You're going to find tar balls still washing up to the beach. I just got more pictures right now from a contact over there. Dead wildlife, massive amounts of dead fish floating around undersea on the bottom of the area over there. And yet we have Obama who's basically putting himself in a position where he's basically acting like a really good PR flack for BP.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio, an interview with journalist Dar Jamail. I'm Dori Smith. In late July, FDA and NOAA declared Gulf seafood safe. While most major networks were interviewing happy fishermen glad to be back to work, Dar Jamail was touring much further into the region to speak with those who said they saw the use of dispersants far beyond what the government had admitted. The government agencies had been giving fisheries the go-ahead prior to having a specific test for the dispersants.
Yes, the seafood from the Gulf of Mexico is safe. It's as safe as we can make this.
Gina Yatalo with NOAA. During the same interview, she admitted they were still working on a test for the dispersant.
We're developing a chemical test to analyze for the dispersant in the seafood samples.
FDA spokesperson Megan Scott answered our questions via email saying, quote, "We cannot give a blanket statement that all seafood from all Gulf waters is safe." We asked Dar Jamail to comment on the statement of Commerce Secretary Gary Locke that, quote, "We need to let the American people know that the seafood being harvested from the Gulf is safe to eat."
Well, I guess I would like the opportunity to take this individual and his family, maybe he has kids, to this inland lagoon we found yesterday, and they can swim in the oil, and they can swim in the sheen and the vile odors that are in the off-gassing that's happening in there. We saw crabs crawling all through it. They can eat some of those crabs. They can fry them up. You know, I guess that would be my response. It's infuriating to me to see these people. I mean, that individual, he and so many other people in the Obama administration like him are literally criminally complicit. They are basically helping set the table so that people are going to be eating extremely contaminated seafood. And when we're talking about Corexit, it's carcinogenic, it's mutagenic. If you're a pregnant woman and you're exposed to it, your fetus will die, period. That's how toxic this stuff is. It's a neurotoxin, it causes respiratory system depression, just a myriad of things that this does. And they're not even testing for it. And their test for oil is a smell test. And they pick up a fish or a crab or a shrimp, and if they can't smell something, then they call it good. It's part of their campaign to show everybody that everything's okay. We can get back to business as usual. BP can keep drilling out in the Gulf, trying to get people to come back down to the Gulf Coast because the economies are in shambles because of this. A big part of that is trying to show that the seafood is okay to eat. And that's just this one aspect of this giant PR campaign that BP and the government have been running to try to show people, oh, look, everything's great. We can just get back to business as usual. Now go back to sleep. And I think that that's part of what this whole seafood situation is. And I think it's probably one of the most insidious parts because it's literally going to be endangering the lives directly of untold numbers of people across the United States.
Dar, can you confirm the use of the Corexit dispersant in Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana?
Dispersants have been used in all four of those states without a doubt. I've talked to VU program fishermen who have been eyewitnesses to dispersants being used either by airplane or by boat or both in all four states. And I've also spoken with people who've been exposed to them and are suffering the health effects from that in all four states as well. So there is no question that they've been used sometimes extremely heavily in all four states.
And why do you think it is that this is going on? Why is the corexit, which you're saying is a neurotoxin dangerous to pregnant women, a carcinogen, why is it being used, really?
It's being used to hide the oil, the amount of oil, for several reasons. One, BP will be fined for every barrel. The final estimate that the government decides is the amount that was gushed into the Gulf, and then the amount recovered, they're going to be charged per barrel and a liability for that amount. And so it's all about protecting BP's bottom line, that the less oil that they estimate and the less oil that they find, the less fines BP is going to have to pay. It's just that simple. Also, kind of dovetailing into that is the less visible oil there is, then the less work there is for the VU program, and the faster BP can get that shut down, also minimizing their liability. So we've seen the response workers numbers go from around a maximum of about 45,000 to now it's well below 30,000 and being chopped down by the day. And so I'm speaking directly with VU people who are going out in their boats, know where the oil is, and literally being called off it and not allowed to go collect it. So that if they can go a few days in an area like what happened in Mississippi recently, and say, well, there's just not a whole lot being found, which is total nonsense because these guys are finding it. And then, as I said before, they're not being allowed to clean it up. Instead, they're going out, sending private contractors out to sink it with this person. That basically means at the end of the day, BP is going to start shutting down these programs in different states, as Mississippi has done, and paying out less money for the response effort. And at the end of the day, it's going to help them with their bottom line. And so that's what this whole thing is about.
You also write in your Truth Out piece that not much money has been paid out.
No, of this so-called $20 billion compensation fund, which is a joke of an amount, because when someone loses their entire livelihood or dies early because they've been exposed to dispersant, or we've had four suicides so far directly related to this disaster and counting, what's that worth? I mean, how do you put a price tag on that? You know, when someone's entire livelihood, they live down on the coast, they're a third-generation shrimper, their kids are into it now, all their community is there, and now you've basically wiped that out for an indefinite amount of time. How much is that worth? Is that $1 million? Is that $2 million? To put an overall price tag on this thing, I think, is also degrading and insulting to people down here. One thing they've tried to do, the Obama administration puts Ken Feinberg in charge of this fund. He's being paid by BP. He will not disclose the amount he is being paid by BP and is basically acting as this kind of apologist and intermediary between Obama administration and BP. And in the end of the day, he's completely complicit in both, and particularly with BP. And so as a result of that, people who are filing claims so far, most of these people have not seen one dime. I have yet to talk to one person who said, yes, they caused this damage. Yes, they showed up and helped me determine it was this amount. I agreed that was a fair amount for me to be compensated. And then they have paid me or started to pay me. I have not met one person in all four states so far down here that can say that. Mississippi also, as part of that PR effort, also Bill Walker was responsible for this as well. They've opened up, you know, you can go shrimp. There's no bans right now in Mississippi that I'm aware of. But the people that go fish, guess what? They're not catching anything. Because like I said before, when shrimp hit corexit, the dispersant, they die. You know, 50% of them die upon contact, and then most of the rest die shortly thereafter. We went out in a boat yesterday from southeast Louisiana. They had opened up some of the areas down there for shrimping, and we literally, right when we pulled out of the dock, we passed two shrimpers coming in. And our captain asked one of them, hey, how'd you do? He said, I didn't catch anything, not a thing. He said, well, how much do you usually catch? And the guy said, 1,000 pounds. Shortly after that, we pass another guy coming in, and he caught 18 shrimp, 1/8. And these are people that usually go out and catch hundreds, if not sometimes 1,000 pounds on a big day. And they're not catching anything. And we were out in bays that were open, not one shrimper out there. Because people know, look, I'm not going to go shrimp because I'm probably not going to catch anything. And if I do, there's basically no market for it. You know, most folks wouldn't eat anything that comes out of there. It's so toxic and it's so bad down here that literally people out of Mississippi are going out and shrimping and they're not catching anything, despite the feds opening the water. And I think that's one of the scariest parts of this whole situation, is not only do we just have complete deregulation for the corporations to do what they want, but we have a government that's basically acting as apologists for them and helping them pretend like this thing isn't so bad and we can open up this area for fishing and people can eat the food that comes out of it, and it couldn't be much more toxic than it is right now. It's a wasteland in a lot of the areas down here, and we've got the pictures to prove it and the facts. And yet we have a government that's trying to basically race seafood back out on the market. And that's a really scary situation. I mean, it really just underscores the fact you cannot trust this government for anything with this situation down here in the Gulf. Not one thing. They have proven themselves as complicit and untrustworthy as BP has from the very beginning.
Well, the Joint Task Force has said some 1.8 million gallons of total dispersant applied. They're saying approximately 577,000 gallons still available, although nobody really seems to have set a clear limit. Representative Edward Markey of Massachusetts, a Democrat, has said that with the new documents about the dispersant, the validity of those numbers are now in question.
I'm really glad that he's doing that, because the validity of all of the numbers put out by BP and the government related to this disaster should be questioned. Absolutely. I mean, we've got the criminal cleaning up the crime scene, BP, with the help of the federal government. Right now, what's going on at the well? You know, we have to take their word that there's a cap and that it's holding, and that appears to be the case, but we have no idea about seeps. And there's independent scientists reporting on seeps coming out of the area of the wellhead that could lead to a further degradation and another rupture in the future that would be far worse than what we just dealt with. And certainly, I think the amount of dispersants that has been used and that has continued to be used, I think it's very safe to assume that this roughly 2 million gallons figure that's been put out by the government and BP, I wouldn't trust that figure for a second. There's no way we can prove it. There's no way we can verify that that's all that has been used. We know that they're continuing to spray it. We know that they've lied. The Coast Guard, I've got a guy on tape lying on camera saying the dispersants have never been used in Florida. And C-130s have never been used to dispense them in Florida. And I've got eyewitnesses in several areas that directly contradict that. I've got a guy in that piece that I talk about who was hit by dispersants from a C-130 just earlier this month off the coast of Florida. And this is just one example. I mean, we could go on for hours of the amount of lying that's going on by BP and the government. And we feel that this story that was released yesterday is very important in trying to bring some more attention to how insidious this is and what kind of program they're using to try to really cover up, temporarily at least, the scale of this disaster and to minimize BP's liability.
What about one of your sources, James Catfish Miller? Tell us about the risks that he's taking, and also what on earth he and others like him are going to do now.
Well, these are open-ended questions, and there's really not a lot of answers for those right now. I mean, and that is the big question that I think we need to keep bringing attention to, is what are these people going to do? You know, and right now, another layer to it is with the Vessels Opportunity Program. That was basically to set up to try to keep employed the fishermen whose lives were completely destroyed by this oil disaster. So it basically took on about 30,000 commercial fishermen, and now they're cutting that program down by the day. And so while that program has existed, we've had this false economy along the Gulf where these people have been able to keep working and keep bringing money in and paying their bills. And those in the VU program are making good money on the days when they're out there working. That program is being cut away as we speak. You know, I'm going to be real surprised if it's even there's much of it left at all in place in another 2 or 3 months from now. And so when that's gone and that false economy's gone, what do these people have? They have nothing. You know, the scientists and the biologists I'm talking with are very clear about the fact that we're going to be looking at years of recovery, if not 20 to 30 years. So when shrimping season opens up next year, or crabbing season, or various fishing seasons, and there's basically not much there to catch, then what do these people do? And there's not a VU program. What do these people do then?
But here you have a resident saying to you, quote, "Last week we were sitting on our boat and you could smell the chemicals. It smelled like death. It was like mosquito spray, but 10 times stronger. And then he says, you know, the following day he felt sick. there are so many witnesses. It's almost like, why take the risk of telling these big lies, which is what your report and truthout.org is about?
Well, I think, you know, there are people speaking up. There are fishermen like James Miller and others who are basically putting it on the line because they feel that it's so important that people understand what's really happening and how dangerous the situation is and the lies that are being perpetrated and kept going by the government and BP, that they're willing to just put it all out there because it's the moral thing to do, and they're angry, and they feel like they've been completely had and left hung out to dry by the government that is supposed to be watching their backs in a situation like this. And so that's basically why they're doing it, and I think it's a really honorable thing for these guys to be doing, and they're definitely putting it all on the line by doing so.
Dar, finally, just comment on some of the headlines about Iraq this week. Pretty grim. And it's like 2004 all over again. You know, a devastating car bombing, dozens of casualties. And in the news, Nouri al-Maliki and former Prime Minister Iyad Alawi, no government still, you know, months after the election.
What's happening in Iraq now? I mean, it's clockwork. You and I were predicting this stuff years ago, Dory. I mean, you know, we have a government, it's a puppet government that can't stand on its own 2 feet. It was never set up to do so by the Americans. And now, just in the last 48 hours, we see General Petraeus saying, well, you know, we're on schedule to leave and we're going to have people out by 2011, the deadline, just like we set up. But if you guys ask us to stay, we'll stay. And, you know, and this comes in the wake of, what was it, last week? The head general in Iraq says we won't be able to stand on our own until at least 2020, so we're going to need the Americans to stay until then. So they're just laying out the propaganda, getting everybody ready, getting everybody primed up to digest the fact when they come out and say, oh, well, looks like we're not going to be leaving after all. We were ready to, but the poor little Iraqis want us to stay. It's a very kind of tongue-in-cheek way to put it, but I think really clarifies, you know, how they've intended to run this thing all along. They've never had real intentions to pull out completely, and that's exactly what we're seeing right now. One thing that has been a success for the Empire Project is that the Western oil companies have, over these last years, managed to get a pretty strong toehold into Iraq's oil market. So we've got several big oil corporations with the ability to start getting involved in Iraq oil production and selling and profiting on that. And that, along with the permanent bases there. You know, I've had people, when I've given talks about Iraq in the past, say, well, couldn't you say from a Bush/Obama empire, U.S. Empire Project perspective, say that that agenda did succeed? And I think as far as the permanent bases being there and the oil contracts for the Western companies trying to get into Iraq's oil, I think you could argue that yes, they have succeeded.
Dar Jamil, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dory.
Award-winning journalist Dar Jamil writes for Interpress Service News. He covered the Iraq War as an unembedded journalist and is author of The Will to Resist, Soldiers Who Refuse to Fight in Iraq and Afghanistan and Beyond the Green Zone. The website is dahr.org. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated nationally with Pacifica Network. TalkNationRadio.org for archives. TalkNationRadio@gmail.com if you'd like to write to us. Underwriting for this program was brought to you by JeremyRHammond.com. Political analysis from outside the standard framework. Jeremy R. Hammond has been a guest on the show. He is founder and editor of ForeignPolicyJournal.com and a recipient of the Project Censored 2010 Award. In this month's issue of Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, Jeremy discusses the impact of the war on Iraq with Mike Otterman, author of the book Erasing Iraq: The Human Cost of Carnage.